podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast.
The question is darts really a sport?
It was the worst tackle I've ever seen.
Fair play to Joe Root, it was a great knock.
There's nothing like a good derby match.
It was easily the best 7-iron I've ever hit.
Right, come on lads, let's crack on.
Hello and welcome to the TWS Sports Podcast with me, Adam Millichip. I'm joined as always by my colleague and good friend, Nigel Boot. And I'm also joined by our two co-hosts, Tom and Thomas, who are both students at Tetnall Wood Special School in Wolverhampton. So just to remind our listeners, Tetnall Wood School is a school for children and young adults with autism. And we have set up this podcast to provide our pupils with a fantastic opportunity to speak to a range of sportsmen and women on a weekly basis. So boys and Nigel, how are you all?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you today. I'm doing fine, yes.
Good. Tom, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Fab, good. So we're going to crack on with our first sportsman in the series. So he's played 38 times for England and 203 times for a club team, Newcastle Falcons. He played in the 2007 Rugby World Cup. I'm delighted to say hello to Jamie Noon. Hi, Jamie, how are you?
Hiya. Yep, good, thank you. Not too bad.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a difficult year for everyone. COVID-19. How has it been for you in France?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster, a little bit like everywhere. I think, contrary to what you guys have done with the vaccine, we haven't had a massive rollout of the vaccine just yet. So we're kind of still a little bit in lockdown and trying to work within those sort of restrictions. Hasn't been that easy, but we're getting through it. And everyone's, I think, just having to adapt to the current situations, the current climate, and do the best they can.
Right, so Jamie, we want to take you back to the start of your career. Tell us about that. Who were your rugby heroes and how did you get into the sport in the first place?
Well, I didn't actually have any heroes as such, just because my dad was a footballer. He played football for the army, he played football for the county and stuff. And so I always thought I'd be a footballer. That was my, I don't think I was necessarily that good at the time I thought I was. So I actually got into rugby kind of by default. I went to a school that didn't play football.
You started your career at Whitby Rugby Club. What are your memories of playing at the club?
No, I really enjoyed my time at Whitby. I still help out. I still got friends who are involved in the club. And you know, for me, it was a real family-orientated club. You know, the guys who we played with or I played with at the time were, you know, all local lads, and they're all guys who just, you know, who just came in and did their best on a weekend, and you know, and it was all sort of a mixture of different sort of, I suppose, statuses. I suppose that there were different people work. You know, people would come in from work after work, do a session. They'll come in, they'll have worked in the morning, maybe a Saturday or Sunday morning, and then they'll play on the weekend. So it was different, very different, but I really enjoyed it, and it was my first sort of, I suppose, taste of adult rugby, which was quite important at the time.
When you were a youngster, Jamie, were you always playing in the centre, or did you move to centre at some point in your career?
So when I was at school, I went to a small school, and so there weren't too many choices, and so I ended up playing back row at school. But I thought I was okay until we played against some of the bigger schools, and they had, you know, naturally bigger guys, and that was quite difficult. And then with Whitby, because again, I was too small for adult rugby to play in the back row. Sometimes I played 9, sometimes I played 10, sometimes I played centre. But it wasn't until I sort of went and joined Newcastle Academy that I started to play centre more often than not. And then when I started my professional career with Newcastle, I started on the wing a little bit.
Did anyone at Newcastle really help you at the start of your career?
There was lots, to be honest. There wasn't just the one. I mean, the main one was obviously the guy who, there was a scout who came and watched me at Whitby, the guy who brought me to Newcastle, who was instrumental. Without him, I wouldn't have had a career. You know, obviously, there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. But Paul McKinnon was the guy who spotted me and saw promise in me. You know, that I wasn't a guy who had done well in these trials, and so for me it was you know, it was a big thing to get the opportunity. You know, I worked really hard, and we had a good group of young lads. You know, we had a lot of guys who came through the academy in those years and went on to play professional rugby. Some played for England, Dave Warder, Tom May. Obviously, Johnny Wilkinson was sort of there or thereabouts. He was our age, but he was playing pro rugby at the time. There was a lot of other guys who came through the academy at the time. So we all kind of fed off each other and worked off each other. Obviously, at the time, the manager of the pro team was Rob Andrew. And so he's helped us young guys come into the squad and also develop especially in those early years.
We've managed to speak to a few people at your old rugby club and your old school. And so one of the questions was, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, is what was it like playing rugby at such a small school in Filing Hall?
Filing Hall, yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, it was a small school. I mean, and we were in the middle of nowhere. We were in the middle of Yorkshire in a kind of a field. You know, we used to walk down this massive hill to get to the games field. But I didn't know anything else. You know, I didn't know anything better, as it were. You know, for us, it was awesome. It was brilliant. We're in nature. We're out the way. We kind of did our own things. You know, we had schooling and we could potter around in and around the, you know, it's Robin Hood's Bay, which is not far from Whitby, and they're beautiful places to be, you know. So I didn't know anything else from the sporting perspective. You know, there were some good guys in there who were, you know, talented in different aspects. And again, you kind of just try and learn as much you can from the staff and from the teachers and do your best. And like I say, I really enjoyed my time there. Really, really enjoyed my time there.
Just going to the sort of last question at the start of your career. We've got a question here from a youth team player at Whitby Rugby Club. And their question is, do you have any advice for youngsters coming through the game at the moment?
Watch as much of the sport, and specifically players who are in your position. We talked about this hero to start with. If there's a particular player top of the game, analyze his game, watch what he does, try and replicate that, you know, and take chances. You know, it's all well and good working a skill in the week, but if you don't try it on the weekend, then obviously you're not actually sort of developing that skill to the full, to the fullest.
Yeah, no, she's some very good advice. Moving on from kind of your youth career into kind of Newcastle, how did that kind of come about? Who kind of approached you, and what are your memories of sort of first signing for Newcastle?
Well, at the time, like I say, there was a group of us, a good young group of lads coming through, and we were asked to play in some of the games that were, it was like an Anglo-Welsh Cup at the time. And so there was a couple of games that were, I suppose, not seen as important. And so a couple of the youngsters got a run out, and, you know, I played on the wing a couple of times. And there was an element of progression. We were training a little bit more with the pros. We were asked to train with the pros, which was awesome. And then in that year, I don't know the reason behind it, but Rob sat, I think there was five of us or six of us down, and said, look, you know, guys, we've got this contract, take it or leave it. So we were like, well, yeah, sweet, cool. So we signed on a couple of years. And then I think that year I got invited to some of the England stuff, and towards the back end of that sort of first season, we started playing more regular rugby. And then the following year, were asked to join the pre-season. It was a World Cup year, so they were missing quite a lot of their stars at the time. So internationals were away. And so we ended up being involved in the warm-up games. And then obviously that sort of sprung to the program games whilst everyone was away. And then when they came back, we still was involved. And that was, you know, it was pretty special to still sort of be clinging on, because it felt like we were maybe there just as, you know, just whilst those guys were away, but it worked out okay in the end.
Looking back at your time at Newcastle, do you feel the team reached their full potential?
Maybe not. We had some really good guys there. We had some real good guys that went on to, you know, a lot of them went on to play international rugby. We didn't quite get the balance right at the time, I think. You know, we had quite a good set of backs, we had a team or a style of playing that was predominantly backs or forwards that run around a little bit. And if we'd had maybe a couple more guys up front that were a bit more sort of set piece orientated, then we maybe could have done a little bit better. But to be honest, for me, it was my club. You know, I felt like us young guys that came through the system, there was a lot of us in there. We kind of, the club kind of molded around us and with us and stuff. And so for me, it was just really nice to be playing for the club and with those, you know, with my mates and my friends.
I know you moved on to France later in your career, but was there any time in your club career where you thought about moving to a different club?
Well, initially it was always Newcastle because I was playing with my friends, I was enjoying it and it was going well, you know, so I didn't see a real concern to move. And then as things sort of developed and I decided that, or I had sort of clubs interested in my services, as it were, that there was always an element of doubt whether we were going the right direction. You know, we weren't doing as well in the league as we could. And there was obviously a lot of other guys who were doing well. And there was question marks as to whether or not you need to be in a better club if you're involved with England. But for me, you know, at the time, Newcastle, I moved when Newcastle had kind of changed and it was, I felt like it was the right time. You know, a lot of my friends had left and the club was going down a different path. And for me, it was the right time to move on, you know.
How do you motivate yourself before a game?
Everyone has their own different approaches. It's quite interesting. A lot of people listen to music. So a lot of players you'll see with the headphones on and the different amount or the different variety or genre of music is quite funny because there's some guys who like dance music, they need rap, heavy sort of rap and lots of swearing and stuff to get into the zone. But for me,
therapy, eh?
Yeah. So, but for me, I just tried to relax before games. You know, I sort of trusted that I'd done the work before the week. So all the week you're training for the weekend. And so I trusted that I'd done the work leading into the game and I just trusted my instincts. The position I played, you never really know what's going to happen in the game and you have to react based on your experiences or previous situations or, like I say, trainings that you've done all week. So for me, it was about reacting. So if I played the game too early in my head, then I'd be too stressed and I'd be too worried. But actually, it wouldn't serve as a real purpose because the game is different every week, you know, and you can't necessarily preempt too much to what's going to happen. So for me, I used to just listen to some nice, relaxing music. I just went through my processes. So strapping, you know, warm up, team talk, and then we'd go out.
Just moving on now to kind of your England career. So you played for Newcastle for a few years and then got your England call up in 2001, was it right? So how did that come about and how did you kind of find out and what was it like getting a call up?
Well, I'd been invited a couple of times to the training. I've even been invited to a couple of games. I'd play England A stuff. So I was kind of on the brink. And then it was a Lions year and we had a tournament. A little bit like this year, we had a tournament, I think we were Canada and America. So they took a squad of young guys and I was in that squad. And then I managed to be picked for the first game. And again, what was really special about it was obviously that it was my first cap, but it was that there was other guys from Newcastle with me, alongside me. And so going through that whole process for the first time with those guys, it felt quite relaxing because those guys were going through it. And like I said before, in terms of preparation for games, they were always there and I always saw them. So Dave Wardo and Michael Stevenson were there. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was nice that they were there to share it with me. The games went quite quickly. We won and we improved. We played three games on that tour and we improved over the couple of games. But it was a special moment for me and I really enjoyed it, to be honest. I really enjoyed the whole experience.
What is the difference between playing rugby for England and Newcastle?
Well, like I said before, Newcastle, you're playing with your friends and you're playing with guys that you train with every week that you know very, very well. When you play for England, you come into a squad and maybe train with each other at the time when I started, we'd do a couple of days in a week. We'd have to go back to our clubs and we'd come down the following week for a day or two and then go back to our clubs. Whereas nowadays, they're down for a little bit longer together. And it's guys that you play against, you know, it's guys that you're fighting with to win and in terms of competitions week in, week out, and then you're sort of all put together. It's a huge, huge amount of pride when you're involved with England. It's a huge, especially anyone for their country is huge playing for your country. In terms of the game and the level, it's so much faster. And the physicality's right up there. You know, sometimes in games for Newcastle, it slows down a little bit, or there's quite a lot of errors, or there's a lot of kicking. With England, it felt like it was going very, very fast all the time. So in terms of decision making, you have to make good decisions very quickly in a limited amount of time, or you're found out, because you're playing against guys that 1 to 15 are as good as you, if not better, and you have to. Know your systems, understand what's being asked of you, and play your part in that game plan, I suppose.
So you played alongside probably the best, if not one of the best, fly halves, both at club and country level. So I just wanted to come on to Johnny Wilkinson. What was it like to have him as a teammate for 12 years, was it, something like that, at club and country?
Yeah, I think it was about 11 years in the end. No, it was obviously, at the time, he was world apart from everybody else in terms of his approach, in terms of his attitude, in terms of his dedication to the game. You know, he was we're the same age, but because of his ability more than anything, he was, you know, I looked up to him throughout my whole career, you know, and I looked to him to try and improve aspects of my game that I really needed to improve and to, you know, maybe be a little bit more professional to try and achieve just a glimmer, a smidge of what he achieved in the game. You know, he was at the forefront, especially, you know, a number 10 that tackled the way he tackled. There was no one around like that, you know. More and more so now, there's obviously players have caught up and the game's caught up. But at that particular time, he was a trailblazer. And you know, it was great to be in association with him, with Newcastle. The way he liked to play was the way I liked to play. He helped me because we had a relatively open style of play, and his ability to attack the line yet still chuck a massive pass helped me get out of certain scrapes and helped me sort of attack a little bit wider. So it, the balance was pretty good, you know. And like I say, his attention to detail, work ethic was second to none. So he drove standards, and he got everybody else wanting to be as good, or if not better than they were.
You and Johnny Wilkinson most have gone on lots of tours together. Do you have stories from your time at Newcastle or England?
You won't find many stories with Johnny, unfortunately. the stories you have, I mean, there's one that was in his book where he used to like occasionally when we weren't involved in games and stuff, we'd go and watch the game. So say, I think it was Newcastle against Leicester one year. And there was a couple of us who were rested for Newcastle. So we went and watched the game at his house. But what we had to do was we all had to dress up. He was sponsored by Adidas at the time, still is, I think, and had a load of Adidas stuff, but it was kind of crazy Adidas stuff. And so we all had to choose an outfit. And then we all went into the village, into the town that he lived, and we had to go and have, I think it was tea and cake, dressed up in fancy dress stuff from his Adidas cupboard. But, you know, he was very professional on and off the field, and so there wasn't too many stories with him. When he was a bit younger, there was maybe a couple more, but
say for the sort of big name that he is, yeah, he's not really in the media very much. You don't really hear too much about him, so I just suppose that shows what kind of a top sportsman he is.
It was his dedication, you know, from the onset. He was like I say, in advance of everyone else. He had foresight to see that he was. The way he continued to train and work, he would achieve what he wanted to achieve.
I see behind you, Jamie, you've got an England shirt on the wall there. Your story behind that shirt?
So that's England, Scotland, 19th of March 2005. And that's...
Special game for you, wasn't it?
Yeah. So a couple of reasons. One, because my son was born like the month before. And this was kind of like the first game that they could get to, and my wife and we'd planned that week to get them down to watch the game. So that in itself, the fact that they were there, my first son was really special. But then I managed to squeak over for a couple of tries. So I managed to get 3 tries in the game. And so it made it even more special for me. So I kept the shirt and got the program. And I've also got the match ball from the game as well.
So was it Sir Clive Woodward who was coach when you were playing for England?
He was coach to start with, yeah. I went through a couple of coaches in my time.
So is there any particular coach that kind of stands out as being, not necessarily better, but more of an influence on the game?
Well, I think with Clive was more manager. He wasn't a coach. He was a manager. But he really put everything in place. So he put a lot of people in place, the best coaches in place to achieve what he achieved. You know, obviously he's second to none in the game in England. And you know, he would literally sort of not leave any stone unturned to achieve what he achieved in the game. Now, every coach comes with a different style, I suppose, different approach and different times that, you know, things that work and things that don't work. But for me, it was all about just trying to be involved on a weekend. You know, I wasn't necessarily too bothered who the coach was. It was trying to do the best I could do and hope that was enough to get an opportunity.
What made New Zealand special and kind of what was it also like kind of face the Haka?
Yeah, I mean, it's a legend, isn't it, the Haka? It's such a, you know, such a tradition. It's such an important part of their game. It's such an important part of their lifestyle as well over there. You know, but growing up and going through rugby, you watch so many games with the All Blacks doing it. And we had some Kiwis who come over and would play play with us or against us, and so that would be a bit of a party trick when they've had a couple of beers. So you kind of get slightly immune to it when you do face it for the first time, because you know it's coming. There's an element of anticipation. You know, a lot of people know certain, you know, some of the words, especially the start and stuff, and so you kind of try not to sing it back to them and not to do the actions and stuff. But but for me, I kind of liked it. You know, it's a challenge. The reason they do the Haka is to challenge you, you know, and I felt like it was something that I could use for me as well, you know, to try and spur me on to do well in the game. You know, they are phenomenal rugby players, 1 to 15. They're all capable of playing with the ball. They're all very good decision makers. They're big, they're strong, they're fast. You know, they have everything. And they also have a way of playing the game that suits them very well. And so, you know, in terms of an opposition, very, very difficult. I didn't win a game against New Zealand.
Before we move on to your retirement, Jamie, my brother-in-law, I was telling him that we was interviewing yourself, and he's mentioned the 2007 World Cup final against South Africa. Did you think that Mark Kato's try was a try?
At the time, I thought, yeah. But then having looked at it, I think that his foot was in touch, to be honest. I mean, it doesn't really matter now. But, you know, at the time, I definitely, well, without a slow-mo replay and stuff, then I would have said, yeah, that's a try. And then, unfortunately, I think there was, you know, it was slightly out into touch, unfortunately.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it went against sadly, but never mind.
Maybe next time.
You were injured for that game, weren't you?
Yeah, so I ended up getting injured in the second game. So I played against South Africa in the second game, and I hurt my knee ligament. So I had to go home, but then I flew out for the final and watched the final in the stands, unfortunately.
Who knows how different it may have been, Jamie, if you'd been allowed to play.
Well, yeah.
Maybe, never mind.
Maybe it'd be worse.
Absolutely not.
So we're going to come on to kind of your retirement, Jamie. And how did that come about? Did you, some people say they know it's time.
Well, I got old. I got very old. So It's a difficult one, really, the old retirement, because everybody wants to continue as long as they can. But, you know, naturally, we want to be the best we can. But when we're not, and when things start to slow down a little bit, then obviously you have to start thinking of the future. Now, I would have liked to have done one more year with Brive, but unfortunately, we didn't agree on contract and stuff. And I just felt that moving away from home and where we were living, I got three children and they were settled here. And I just didn't feel like that was necessarily worth putting them through just for one more year. So thankfully, I got through my career relatively injury free, and so didn't have too many issues. Don't have too many issues now. So so I got out maybe a little bit premature, but then I got out on my own terms, and the body's fine.
How did that move to France come about? Why France? Why not another club in England?
Well, I think that was exactly it. It was this element of, if I stayed in England, I would have been playing against the same people, the same teams, the same, you know, and I was kind of in a bit of a period of my life where if we're going to do something different, I felt like it was something, you know, worth doing something different. We played against Brive and I obviously played okay, and they contacted me after and asked if it was something I would look at, and it'd never been on the radar. I hadn't sort of thought about going over to France, but at the time it was like, well, why not? Let's explore it. And we ended up, my wife came over to have a look first, because if you keep the wife happy, then the rest of that. So she came over, and I think it was maybe January, February time, in the glorious sun over here in France. It was beautiful. And in England, I was looking after the kids and it was raining. So she was like, well, this is awesome. Let's do it.
No brainer.
Exactly.
Looking at your Instagram, I see you're into your cycling. Is that what you do to keep fit?
I wouldn't say I keep fit anymore. What it actually helps me with is just stress. You know, I like I said, I trained and I was professional and I worked really hard for a long time as a rugby player. And so I needed that outlet. I needed that sport. I needed to do some form of exercise. It helps me declutter. It helps me de-stress. And also it helps me stay relatively healthy. You know, I think especially with all that is COVID and being at home and stuff, it's something that's helped me manage it all. You know, I enjoy it. I enjoy especially, you know, a lazy Sunday bike ride with some friends and stuff. I really do enjoy it. It's challenging. It's not necessarily easy. I've done a couple of mountain stages and stuff, and I found them really, really tough. I'm not built as a cyclist, so it's tough, but I do really enjoy it, if I'm being honest.
What's the best thing about living in France?
Well, you could say the wine, the cheese. It's I think compared to the Northeast, it's got to be the climate. The weather is a lot better here than it is in the Northeast, more often than not.
Yeah. How did you find the language barrier?
Well, I found it tough to start with because as a rugby player, French wasn't necessarily high on my priorities as a child. So I didn't do too much French. And then I came to France and then it was baptism of fire. And you know, basic things, just getting, you know, going to shops and trying to, you know, sort your house out with, you know, washing machines and stuff. I just didn't know. I just, we used to carry a dictionary around before Google Translate. Now Google Translate, I've seen people talking to each other into Google Translate. It's phenomenal. So, but after, you know, a year or so, maybe a bit longer, you start to pick up the basics and understand more and more. And we like I say, we had three children at school and French school, and they ended up helping loads, and we end up using them as our translators as well. So now it's not too bad. It's a bit easier.
Question from a listener, Jamie.
Hi, my name's Neil. Do you have any pre-match superstitions?
I sort of did, yeah, in the sense that I wouldn't put my match shirt on until I was just going out. So I'd do the warm up. I always got very sweaty and quite hot. So I'd have done the warm up. I'd take my top off and I'd be getting like my boots on or changing my boots or whatever, and getting my gum shield and getting ready for the game. And then we'd come together. I'd always obviously have my shirt on me. I'd carry my shirt, but I wouldn't put my shirt on yet until I was going out. There wasn't initially, which was because I was so hot, I just didn't do it. But then because that's what I did, I kept that up. Like I say, there's a lot of superstitions in the game, and people have to go out last or have to go out first, or, you know, there's lots of different things, but that was my thing. And when you have a superstition, it's all fun and games, except for when you don't have that thing, you forget that thing, or it's broken or it's ripped, or, you know, a friend of mine at Breathe, he used to wear a shirt that he had from school. So I was like 13 years old. So he has this shirt, but it's all ripped. It's all horrible color. It's horrible, but he had to wear that under his top. But as soon as, and if and when that isn't there, then the mind games of, I've gone the other way then, haven't they? So
it's strange. I don't think in any other sort of job you have superstitions, but it seems that every sportsman, even for myself, who just plays at local level, right to the top sportsman, everyone's got some sort of superstition. And I suppose it starts off, you do something once, you win the game, and you think that's the reason you won the game, because of what you did. And then it just continues, doesn't it?
We have a question from Matt in Shrewsbury.
Hi, Jamie. Matt Creed here. Just wanted to ask, what's the best prank that you've been involved in, whether it be you or teammates? Cheers. Thanks, bye.
Best prank. I'll tell you the strangest prank. Obviously, at rugby clubs, most guys have their lockers in the training ground. A lot of guys lock their lockers. A lot of guys, you know, have their boots in there, have some supplements, maybe some protein or some spare kit and stuff. Well, when I was in Breathe, there's a couple of times where they used to prank people by putting things in their locker. So when they open their locker, they could see this, whatever it was. And so I'd seen chickens in there, live chickens. People put live chickens. I've seen heads of animals, so pig's heads. So if there's an islander who's doing a big pig roast, sometimes there's a pig head in there, various things like that. So it's a bit freaky, a bit scary, but
a bit dark, isn't it?
It definitely has a it definitely gets a response from the person opening that locker, I'm telling you.
I'd just like to finish by saying thank you so much to Jamie for taking the time to chat with us today. We really appreciate it, and we really appreciate the time you've given us, Jamie. You didn't have to do it, and us as a school are really, really thankful for taking the time to chat to us.
No problem at all. Thanks for all the questions.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Tom.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah,
thanks.
So our next podcast, boys, any idea who's coming up?
Yeah, so it's a really exciting one. We're joined by actor, film producer, musician and host of his Talk Sport show, Johnny Owen. I also know he's a big football fan, so it'd be good to hear his views on everything that's happened in football over the last few weeks. Our TWS Sports podcast is going to be released every Tuesday, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. The TWS Sports podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and many other podcast streams. So thank you, Nigel, and cheers for joining us, boys. And thanks, Jamie, and thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
If you would like to get in touch with us on the podcast about a story, or you have a question for a guest, then please email twssportspodcast@hotmail.com.
Hi, it's ex-England rugby player Jamie Noon here. Make sure you subscribe to the TWS Sports Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and other podcast apps.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.